of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharma Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyambi tatiyambi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening, or even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. We are here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
I continue to look at everything is woody. It's difficult to see this being as Buddha.
This being sitting right here?
Yes.
And what's difficult about that?
The habit and the... how condition usually addresses him.
Say that believing conditioning is what makes it difficult to see as being as the Buddha?
Thank you. something just came up during the daily recitation about seeing him as Buddha is a religious observance. And noticing how disrespectful voice to him. Also what a great gift to allow him to be and just spend time.
Conditioning doesn't want me to talk about this. So
you're going to.
So I'm going to. So coming to the monastery again, there's a sense of familiarity about some things.
Mm-hmm.
Just the layout of the monastery and the colour of the pottery and
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Although if you start exploring into the, you know, seeing the hermitage and things like that, you might start getting startled by some
yeah.
of that.
Yeah. And I think, and that's it, conditioning is saying, oh, you've got to stay in beginner's mind, and if you think you know, you're really going to get beaten for this, or you're going to run into stuff really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trying to use that as a way to make me fearful of the experience that I might have here.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, there's something about also, there's something about some kind of confidence that is growing as a result of practice,
mm-hmm.
about trusting life and seeing myself turn to life more often for guidance. So yesterday I committed 3 crimes.
Okay.
So And it's really interesting. The first crime was around a conscious decision that I made not to do what conditioning, the guidance is I should have done something, and conditioning was telling me I should, but I made a decision instead to look after the part of me that was sad or unhappy, knowing that that could result in a note or running into guidelines here, and I got the note. and it is actually quite amazing to me that I'm coming the other side of that and going, yes, I turned to mental and I turned to life and I made a decision that was going to be the wrong thing and would result in quotes disapproval through the notes, and it still seemed the right thing, the thing that was being wanted at that time. I also understand that maybe at a different time in my spiritual practice it wouldn't have been the compassionate thing to do. There would be someone here that understood that it would have been better to follow the guidance. But it seems to me that at that time it was the compassionate thing to do. And for Enneagram Type 1, that's a bit of a triumph.
Yes.
So in some ways there was a knowing there that came from life. And then there was another thing that I did which was kind of conditioning made me do so I could get beaten for being lazy. Because I didn't put my jacket in the right place. So but at the time there was someone there who wasn't present and didn't, I wasn't present and conditioning made me do it, even though in the back of my head, in retrospect, I knew that wasn't the right thing to do.
So let me see if I'm following you. You had, as you were going along, you did something that, would you say that you knew was not to do, but conditioning just had you do it and therefore resulted in the beating?
Yeah, I think so. Someone at the back of my head, somebody knew, but conditioning befuddled me and I wasn't present enough for that information to come forward and be there. Explicit knowing. I think so, in retrospect. How can I not know? I've been here before. And no one else is leaving their jacket in the dining room. It's clearly somebody knew, but there was befuddlement over the top. So I suppose what I'm trying to articulate is that these different types of knowing.
Yeah.
Explicit, but that where it's coming from life. Mm-hmm. And I guess then conditioning now using the second example of saying I didn't know or knowing something different to cause me to be punished because to beat me for being lazy, this type of thing. And I'm just trying to unpick,
which implies that you knew what you were doing. Do you know?
Yes.
I mean, the lazy judgment that it is trying to use in that. Because it's like, if you were unconscious, you would have just left it there. And
I don't know. It's a bit like the battering kind of cycle in that I went unconscious, I did something.
Right.
That someone back here knew. How could I not know? You know? And then conditioning gets to pick up at and then say...
Yeah, see, there you knew, and you were just lazy, and you didn't do what you were supposed to do.
Yeah. So it's bringing that knowing to the front of my mind, to kind of somehow. And I think that's really what I'm looking at, is is where life is giving me a knowing or a sense of, or a sense of it being a helpful and supportive action.
Mm-hmm.
Or then when conditioning is putting a blanket over the top or pretending I don't know or saying I know something different.
Yeah.
And it's trying to examine the texture of those experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And understand what knowing can be without the I piece of it getting in the way too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't go into my third crime because it's, I think, I'm making the point that this is just something that I'm, it's not really bad, I guess I'd say.
Uh-huh.
Well, what it was is I took a piece of fruit last night from the kitchen into my dorm, thinking I might have it for breakfast. But what was the point in that? That conditioning gets to call me sneaky, gets to call me and gives me the kind of thing like, why did I sneak around with a piece of fruit and take it from the dining room into the dorm, which I know I'm not supposed to do?
Mm.
It's so that it could beat me up. Because I just brought it back this morning and had it for breakfast. There's a whole security thing that goes on around having food, I can see. But there's, again, that's just a level of, someone knew that was not the right thing to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm just very interested in the different levels of knowing all of that. You know, it's like, there, I don't know if this is your experience, but it certainly feels like mine. It's like, as I'm, the examples that would come up for me as I'm walking along, and I see, you know, a piece of trash on the ground, and I know, you know, I can pick it up and remove it and take it and throw it away, but conditioning will be right there on the heels of it and say, well, you know, it's probably someone else that did that, and it's their responsibility to do it, and gosh, all sorts of excuses around why not to do it. And then someone will approach me and say, did you just see that piece of trash? Well, why didn't you throw it away? And I say, well, I knew. And then conditioning just has the opportunity to come in and use the information that I had to beat me up for that, for knowing better. You know, in your case, it would say you were lazy because you didn't do what you knew to do.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like the piece with the fruit. I knew, and I had to be sneaky not to do it. The second example was, how could I have not known? Someone in the back of my mind knew that it wasn't right to leave the jacket there. And the first example was like, there was a conscious knowing, even though it was going to result in something conditioning didn't like. And it's kind of stratify these different things again, without having too much eye in there, seeing how it feels or seeing and. No doubt there will be ample other opportunities to explore it.
Yeah, that's really a fun way to look at it, as opportunities to see it in action. Because it's like, you know, conditioning is going to be very unhappy with all of it because, well, happy in a different way, but happy in the sense that it will use them as opportunities to cause us to suffer. But our opportunity in that is to see how it all operates, how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Jim.
I'd like to look a little bit at assignment 7 in the emo class.
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me know if everyone in here is familiar with that?
I can't speak very well. Yes, you are.
Okay. So it's about literally doing nothing.
Oh, just doing that.
Having time and doing nothing, and it's at times when I've been staying at the monastery for an extended length of time, it was the absolutely hardest place. And after the assignment, it says, you know, it's horrible. I think the word horror was used. And I have no freedom around it at all. It is horrible. You know, it is having the thought. You know, I never let myself have the experience anymore. the thought is horrible.
The thought of that.
I'm happy to be talking about it because I just saw that. Mm-hmm. And never with it never lets me have the experience to see whether or not it truly is. It is avoided assiduously. Okay. I'll test it. Thank you.
Well, I just think it's very interesting that it's come up in the resistance class.
Yeah.
To do one thing. You know, it's like, I don't have resistance to doing all sorts of other things, but try to get me alone and with nothing to do. Wow. Krishna hates that.
Don't even meditate. Mm-hmm. Don't go for a walk. Don't think about stuff. Didn't I? Empty time. Mm-hmm. You just sit in it. It's hard fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm gonna give it a try.
All right. Can't wait to hear. Janet.
So I'm practicing various things, like they all seem to converge, like the email class, and this first week I was focusing on the Buddha everywhere, and this next week I'm choosing the focus for pure attention, pure awareness. So I noticed the Buddha in my bladder getting up at 4:30 in the morning. That same little story, like, and it's not a rule about it, but, you know, I kind of don't want to get out of the bed right now. And then, you know, I just, oh, you know, thanks for a good reason to get out, and I won't use the bucket up. You know, it's so darn cold, I'm sleeping with my clothes, I'll just put one more layer on and go for a walk. Use that. I know I have a practice, I call it the practice of aimlessness. I do that sort of thing, and I lose all track of time, but I just, moment by moment, go somewhere in nature. And so I didn't know what area I was going in. And I knew that when I went down that way in the dark, and again I took the things I thought would keep me safe, like my headlamp, but it was a backup plan. I didn't need it with the moon. And it was just like, I wonder, you know, at first, like, if the moon will be, oh, it's in a different place. This is changing and shape. I don't, you know, not even comparing, just when I remembered that, like doing nothing, I'm just wandering aimlessly, I would just stop on the path. And I could just drop that. I'm comparing it to like the walk was like, you know, 2 nights ago or something else. And so just, it took me wherever it took me. And sounds that might have startled me, you know, and there was a sound that it just dropped in, that sound I heard, you know, when I was 21 in Greece, and I thought it was an alien spaceship, and it really scared me, even like all night long. And I was like, well, that's interesting, and drop it. I would just stand still. And so I took a different route along. And this whole thing took 3 hours. I was astonished when I got back. But what was fascinating was just every time I just stopped, a new awareness, like the coolness of that side of the hillside compared to this side, you know. Or the birds waking up, you know, I would hear them. Just the odd little scratch or the little muttering, and it took about an hour for various ones, different ones, and it was exquisite. Just exquisite.
The subtle different attention things that your attention was drawn to.
And I do practice that sort of thing, but I don't usually practice it at 4:30 in the morning. Just like, and I could have easily slept. I wasn't awake, and if I need to do something, I was actually tired. And I just thought, you know, let's just challenge that notion of, you know, getting our people around or whatever. Mm-hmm. One of the, let's call it a metaphor or something, is I heard a bunch of noise coming through the bushes while I was standing there just silently. And then I heard something, you know, then it went kind of quiet. So I just turned my head along the road, and was a very large hare with enormous ears. Mm-hmm. And we just looked at each other and paused. And, you know, I didn't, and you could, it's like the wheels turning around. It was like seconds went by, and then all of a sudden, I guess it just didn't feel safe. I didn't do anything different. And when it took off into the woods, it absolutely was crashing, cracking twigs and smashing and going through. And I thought, that we're all sentient beings. We all want safety. And sometimes we don't know when the safety is there and when it's not safe. And it was just like I could hear the fear. And you know, my projection was, you know, that's what I did the other night when I heard the corrugated iron. Like, I heard that. Mm-hmm. And I felt the adrenaline and the fear. And I felt some story, and I made myself stand and just feel, well, that's what fear feels like. Yeah. So that was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Amazing things that happened in the monastery.
Yeah. I do want to talk about one more thing, because in my guidance that I had when I was doing the working meditation and putting up, you know, hanging the hooks and seeing, oh, the hook's going to be hanging, yeah, it needs to be on the thick part of the door, maybe not on the drywall or something, and, you know, thinking about that. And then just the guidance was just, you know, you don't actually need to think about it, just, mm-hmm. you know, just trust. And the beauty of it is that here at the monastery, I feel like I can trust. And I realized in my life, there were so many places and, you know, where it really isn't safe to trust, and you have to know who to trust, and, you know, that experience. So I really have deep appreciation that I can actually be here. It feels uncomfortable sometimes, wanting to trust something. Mm-hmm. But I intuitively know this is, you know, when I give over to the form, or I give over to the guidelines, or, you know, I just trust it, because there's a part of me that wants to explain my position and not feel hurt, and he, you know, that this.
Right.
And it isn't easy,
mm-hmm.
but it's probably the closest I come to being able to feel absolutely free to trust.
Yeah, yeah. It's that place where we just practice with letting life inform, and knowing less is oftentimes more helpful, because what's going to know is conditioned mind.
Yeah,
it's going to come in with, well, why are they saying this, and how does this work, and all to take us away from actually being here,
mm-hmm.
actually doing what it is that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Steve.
Shasheen yesterday, walking meditation was beautiful. And then on the very last sit, the rest of the last sit, my legs just go, I'm going to be kind to myself, and I'm going to sit on the bench, in the chair on the back, in the last sit. Okay, so I made that decision to do that, and we finished walking, that we're doing walking meditation, the last one, and then in comes somebody else into the walking meditation, and then we stop at 5:30, and then the rest of the monks come in for the 5:30 sit, and right away, this sub-personality jumps in and goes, nope, you gotta go to Christian again. You gotta show them that you can do it.
Yeah, they could think that you've been sitting on that bench the whole time.
And sure enough, I went and sat on the cushion, and my leg was just like ready to blow off, you know? And I sat just paralyzed, basically, but would not move. Mm-hmm. I thought if I moved one inch, my leg would take off and I'd be gone. So, and just noticing that subpersonality come up a lot. He's not always there, but I'll be walking up the path, mm-hmm. And another person will come, and then sometimes I can sense it's a monk or just your peripheral, and he'll think he's doing the wrong thing or something, and he's not doing anything but walking.
Right.
And because it's a monk, a resident monk is an authority figure, uh-huh. And so he has a fear of the monk's side. Even though he's not doing something wrong, mm-hmm. he is doing something wrong.
Right. And conditioning is going to find out what that is and get you in line.
Right. So I'm looking at that, mm-hmm. and just out of the blue for not even doing anything wrong, he's doing something wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can trust it to look for those kinds of things.
Yes. But the most dominant thing I've been seeing now in the story is the subpersonality of the rehearser. Mm-hmm. Also, every time I get caught in a story, he's rehearsing to talk in group, he's rehearsing to text Sherry, mm-hmm. He's rehearsing when he leaves the monastery to tell them about their experience. Rehearsing all the time.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just grateful I get to see that, so now I have now that I've seen it more clear,
yes.
I have the ability to mentor now as that comes up, mm-hmm. rather than just push him away. You know, a lot of times I'll just drop it, come back to breath, but now I know where to go and mentor with him and see. I'm going to bring him today for being. Today's a day of being. And I'm going to bring all the kids with me, uh-huh. so they can see what it's like, or we'll all see what it's like to be, to just be.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll see they won't have to rehearse, they won't have to have fear. Maybe just being is enough.
Yeah, and it's really interesting as you're talking about all that. It's just an opportunity to practice. You know, like, you're having the experience of this is what happens to Steve as he goes along and stays in a monastery. You know, it's like, kind of like, well, the purpose of coming here is in general is to see all this stuff come up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, what happens when, you know, his leg is in pain and, you know, group of monks come in and how does that, you know, translate into doing what he does, and it's like that whole part of the sequence from the email class, you know, the movement, sensation, thought, you know, emotion, and conditioned behavior. I think I got them in the right order: emotion, mm-hmm. thought, and behavior.
Yes, it's really nice to see.
Yeah, thank you, Penny.
I had this great experience yesterday. I had an experience in the morning of getting into a behavior that's so automatic, a pattern that's so automatic, I didn't see it at all. Mm-hmm. And then practice offered me two opportunities to see it. So I got on the computer, and I'm one email class behind, so I was doing the movement sensation in mm-hmm. that class. And all of a sudden, I thought, well, you know, I'll just need to apply this to what I just went through. Mm-hmm. And threw a whole new light on it, you know? And then right after that, I had a guidance from it. Mm-hmm. And so part of what was just so fascinating was how, you know, it's exactly, I realized it's just analogous to that walking down the path, and I'm in a hurry, and I see a piece of trash, and I just blow right by. Mm-hmm. It's like that. It's like, if I get into it, I can get into an automatic way of responding to a familiar situation so fast
yes.
that I don't get that I'm doing an automatic thing.
Yeah, right.
I blow right
by. It's just what happens.
Yeah. And what I was discussing in guidance was that is that once I'm in that, mm-hmm. within that context, what I'm thinking about makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so it's difficult in that context because there doesn't seem to be any reason not to be doing it.
Right. Like maybe in this example, you were busy, you had to be somewhere, and it just all fits into place that you wouldn't stop and pick up the trash.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once
I was doing was solving a problem, mm-hmm. basically. Well, once I have bought into the notion that it's that kind of problem, mm-hmm. then thinking about these kinds of solutions makes perfect sense. You know, and the idea that I could step back from that and take a whole different look at it doesn't even enter in.
Right, yeah, because it's so clouded with the world that you're having to be in at the moment.
Right. So it's just so helpful that, how practice is operating, especially these days, it's just like something like that happens and bang, there's another practice opportunity, bang, there's a tweet, bang, there's a, you know, practice appointment. And it's a chance to say, wait, hold on. And then stepping back, I went to the mentor, and what the mentor had to say was so simple, as usual. So simple compared to all the stuff I've been going through. And I saw a couple things. One was how the automatic behavior has ultimately really nothing to do with the issue. It's just the behavior that kicks in.
Yes.
It doesn't care about the issue. It's not related to the issue. It just operates.
Yes. Yeah, it's like a machine.
It's like a machine. And it gets a certain cue, and then that's what it does.
It just goes on through, yeah.
Yeah, and the mentor was really addressing the issue and the being in a very direct way. It's just, the difference, I guess, was just really stunning to me. Mm-hmm. And then, in a way, the best part was that about an hour later, I looked back on it, and I thought, I didn't have an ounce of self-hate about that. Mm-hmm. You know, having all that come to light, and just seeing how totally automatic that was, and how I do it, you know, probably a million other like that.
Yes.
It was just a heads up to pay attention to those, and there wasn't any self-hate, and I thought, wow, that's the best part.
That's what makes awareness practice fun. Otherwise, it's just become, oh, I don't want to see that, because if I see that, it's just going to be labeled something hideous.
I just found myself laughing, you know, like, whoa, this is just so off target, you know. This is so off target, and the other thing that really, I was feeling, I had a call this morning as well, And I just have such a feeling these days that we are so all in it together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that everyone and every practice opportunity is here to assist everyone all the time.
Yeah.
And it just feels so supportive.
Yeah, it's so supportive that it's hard not to see it as a big gift. You know, like all of these different ways, like as you're talking, and the tweet, and the guidance appointment, and the email class, and all this. It's just every chance that you can get to get just say, stop. Where are we? You get the bigger picture rather than getting trapped up in that little world where that's just the air I breathe.
Yeah. Conditioning is saying, oh God, there's all these practice things to do.
Stop it already.
That's right. And,
wants to stop that instead of it.
That's right. So it's just great. It's really great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just had a nice moment just now sitting here, and I was just sitting here, and this little voice just gently said, you don't have to be the right person. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking how, you know, we often say when you're hearing a you voice, it's conditioning, well, you this and you that, and I thought, well, this was a you voice, but it was not conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
It was clearly just, you don't have to be the right person. And it was just, my whole body just relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I just thought there are other new voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you knew how, based on how your body responded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very different response. I mean, it was clearly a mentor voice.
Yeah.
That just,
yeah, like mentor, what mentors would say, it's like, mentor talks to me and you as well.
Yeah,
I love you. And
exactly.
You're perfect exactly as you are.
Exactly, yeah. And I just love those moments when it just, that kind of support and guidance just comes in when we're not even really seeking it. you know.
Exactly, yeah. What would you attest to it?
Pardon me?
What would you attest to it showing up?
Uh, sitting here and breathing. having had it pointed to that, that a lot of the times when I'm talking about what I'm seeing that conditioning does, I'm doing the same thing that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Rather than just dropping it and being here, you know, but putting a lot of attention on, well, this is who I am and this is how I do it and this is ridiculous and, you know, yeah, it is, it's conditioning, it is ridiculous. And so just stopping and breathing. And so since having that pointed to you, I have been just breathing more often, and I think that just clearly makes me more available to what's there.
Yeah.
When I'm there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's back to the clearing up all that space.
Yeah.
Rather than even getting involved in conditioning's world.
Right. Yeah. And I think maybe what also may have contributed to it is, this is really interesting. Something came up and just got a little bit emotional. I think it's because someone was committed to showing up today, because I've had something going on that could have been a cold or something for a week, so I haven't been able to show up in this place. And someone really wanted to be back showing up in this place, and at the same time came with a spirit of, I don't have to bring me with me, and I don't have to show up as someone, I don't have to bring anything, I don't have to have a story, I don't have to have an opinion, I don't have to have a viewpoint.
You don't have to be perfect.
I can just show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can just show up.
I can just show up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that would be more than sufficient.
Yes.
That would be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay.
Cameron. That and several other things that have been said today, sort of like something I'm looking at, and it's kind of like a big mega process. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of reminding me of, I worked for an organization or a company at one time where I fixed computer machines.
Mm-hmm.
And they had these big flow charts, big, you know, each machine had a flow chart, and so when something's not working, it starts at the beginning, you know, like, does it have power? And you say yes, and you say yes, and you go down the yes wing of this thing.
Uh-huh.
If you say no, there's a whole other place that you go.
Like plug it in.
Yeah, you start exploring the power. You know, if you have yes, then it goes on, and it asks you all these questions that, and every time there's a yes, you go one way, another time. So it's like, the one I'm looking at, I think, is kind of like the first question that sets you down the flowchart. And it is doing things because.
Hmm.
You know, if there's a because for what I'm doing or how I'm being or what I'm deciding, then I go on this leg of the flowchart. I'm not being. I'm doing something because. And so the because, it seems like it's kind of like the end product or the end goal or something.
Right.
And so just doing it because then sort of takes me on the leg of the flowchart that doesn't give me an opportunity to be present. I'm not doing it because. Just because there's a something that, yeah, and so I've just been kind of seeing how often for an entire lifetime, you know, right from the get-go, whoop, off on the wrong wing of the flowchart, you know,
That gets co-opted into that place rather than the other side where you could just do kind of like the being that was just talked about.
Yeah, how natural of a decision that is, that we have to do it for some reason, because yes. As was said earlier, the thought of not having any reason, just not, you know, just being, mm-hmm. is like sort of inconceivable for, you know, for life in the world of a conditioned human being. Mm-hmm. And so if even doing practice, well, it's because.
Right, I want to.
Yeah, you know, there's an end. There's
a whole lot of things.
Yeah, and it mm-hmm. sort of gets into the same category of being the right person or whatever the because is. Mm-hmm. And so I've just been keeping an eye on that and just really thinking, wow, that's a kind of a sad thing to find out at this stage. But at least, you know, finding it out sometimes is better than not at all.
Finding out at all, yeah. Well, it leads back to, wow, this is an amazing insight, and not allowing conditioning to turn it into a source of self-hate, but it's like, okay, here's the flowchart.
Yeah, well, I've been trying that just being, and actually, it might be how come this awareness came out is by practicing that, because it's just so different. I mean, it's just like, and I actually have been feeling like I don't even know if I'm really doing it, because I'm so geared to, you know, I'm not even sure. I mean, I don't know if I'm being, but I've really enjoyed the process of exploring it.
Yes.
It feels like there's so much possibility there for an entirely different experience than is possible for doing things because.
Yes.
You know, it just feels huge.
Yes.
And it feels like that is the, you know, that is the leg of the flowchart that leads to life.
Mm. Wow. And that's just opened up for you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, it. You know, like, do you want to choose door 1, 2, or 3? No, this is door 4, or something that
right.
hasn't even been on the chart.
I haven't even seen that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like very exciting.
It does feel very exciting, too. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't have anything more to say about it, I don't think, but it just that possibility is very, very in its fetal stage, and feels like something is being born.
Well, that's
or somebody, maybe. You know.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Be able to...
Who knows?
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to explore that being versus doing a little bit more myself. Yeah, that's been a very interesting homework assignment, and I would think that I would tell you, oh, that sounds really fun. I mean, that I probably have the least resistance to doing that, and that would be wrong. The concept, yeah, you know, to drop the doing, and, you know, and to see how much of that doing is designed to be the right person, to get the approval, to, yeah, just that constant, and what a tool of condition that is to just keep me in its grip.
Yeah, and to not be able to see anything else other than that, just to be right in with it.
I can't, I'll be as soon as I get this do. I just got to do this.
Carve out this time for being after I've gotten.
I just got to do this one thing. You know, that'll be on my.
And then that thing. And
that could be on my tombstone. You get to do one more thing.
And you have to do one more thing.
You have to tell me. Tell she stop. So what is that being thing? You know, and I have noticed that the times that it's just come, that that's a possibility. I have noticed all of a sudden life there. And that is suddenly it's beautiful. Suddenly there's just, you know, just much more available around and for this life form called Sequoia. And that's pretty exciting. Condition would have me think that being means I just have to lay down horizontal and not move. I'm just do being.
Well, because it would be like, look, you're lying down. That's not being. You're always doing something.
Right.
At least that's what that was my experience.
So what is the opportunity to be and also be, let's see, boy, words are hard, and to also be moving through space and time and, you know, hands working, feet working, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. And as near as I can see right now, you know, it's that place of dropping the thinking all the time. Mm-hmm. And what would that like be like, to just go in that state of being, mm-hmm. without this
thing
doing machine?
Yes. Well, that's so interesting, as you're talking about, this is the part that has trouble with the being.
Exactly.
It's almost as you're talking about it, it's like body and being in here and doing things in it has no trouble at all.
Right. The body loves that being, that just aliveness, that
life. It does it despite us.
Right. The poor thing. Really. Yeah. Just kind of dragging along with this, you know,
this
little dueling headquarters, you know. Just kind of dragging it along after it. And it's funny too, then I'll say, okay, well, today's the day I'm really going to do that homework assignment. I'm going to really do it today.
Boy,
it's a mystery. So, I don't have any answers to it, but it's kind of a fun exploration.
Yeah.
It's been a great class. Mm-hmm. A really, really great class.
It's amazing. It's like, if you think that it could blow up in more space as it goes on, and all of a sudden, boom, the next assignment comes out. And it's,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I know. You can see the amount of resistance there is to just being. You realize what you're up against.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, so it's a beautiful day.
Exactly. This is occurring to me, too. Thank you. Jen?
I've been really interested in practicing with it as well. And one of the things that I've been seeing and has come up a little bit in the discussion this morning is the piece about disconnecting feeling as having any meaning. And because I watched, it's interesting, I hadn't seen the connection until in the discussion, but last night, there's so many things related to it. One, there's a peace book that came out about 10 days ago or so, 2 weeks ago, that I realized it's changed my life. At the time when I read it, it went, wow, that's cool. And it's come back through my consciousness so many times. It was the one about, it's only work if we want to be doing something else. And, oh boy, I just love that. And so, there's trillions of things that I want to do.
Right.
Just trillions.
Yes.
You know, that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an interesting thing that can happen where I wait to feel like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So look around for which things do I feel like doing. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but it's a little bit of a victim stance, like, I gotta be in the right frame of mind. Particular one.
No, yeah.
Yeah. And if something happens on the process level, right, so there's going to be this span of time right, to do, and then something happens on, even more on the energetic level, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, something's ruined now. You know, where is that person who's going to, like, get up there and knock through it? You know, uh-huh. that's the person I need, who's, like, clear and full of energy and like uh-huh. that. And so I was watching that last night and realized, I completely don't need that. That I don't need to be in X feeling or energy, let's say in California, in order to whatever.
Right, because and they don't go together.
They don't. It seems so much like they do. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is that pathway is so tied.
It's like that, if only, you know, that's this, mm-hmm. like that cry of conditioning, like if only the circumstances were right, if this was aligned this way, it's always to put it off for, it's like that, it's like putting off the assignment to just be. It's like, well, who's afraid of what?
Exactly.
What's going on here?
That was the thing that I was seeing, and the connection there, is that it's that, like, that same thing, like, either, I'm going to do that being thing, and I'm going to wait for that person who wants to do that to show up, and or I'm going to do it and watch. Conditioning is going to watch to see if I'm feeling the way that this is supposed to feel, just be.
Exactly. Am I having the right experience that just being would provide for me?
Yeah.
And it knows what that would be.
Right. I really, really appreciated the decision tree thing and the doing this because. That's very, very helpful to see how prevalent that is. So I'm going to do the being assignment because, and it's not said, of course, but because it's going to feel a certain way.
Right.
And I'm going to get a certain thing out of it.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to write a certain response into the email class, and then that's going to get a certain response, and then, you know, it's going to be great.
Exactly.
And never getting to actually receive what there is there to receive, because I already have it all planned out.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. It just wants to take everything. It's like the rehearsing thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's rehearsing so that it can just, it's doing what it's doing so that, it can just take what I'm having right here away from me.
Yeah.
And it's such a, you know, like with the tree, it's just, it's perfect that way too. It's just to see what the underlying motive under that. So when that was being shared, I just saw, like, you could plug anything into it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm doing yoga in the morning because, and just start filling it in. And it's so different from just the experience of doing it. And it's amazing who shows up to have the, like, will this pearl show up to, like how he looks afterwards or something like that or something like that.
And just the beautiful, delicate art of being in everything. Whether there's a lot of movement happening that could seem like doing, but just, you know, because there's tons of movement in life, you know, but it doesn't have to be doing.
It's like how we sometimes talk about stillness, too. The stillness is there, even as we're going along doing it, doing things. Yeah. But just touching into that and having that be the place from which life...
Place from place, which there, you could just place from sentence.
Exactly,
Thank you.
Justin.
Real quick, I just want to acknowledge something I've been seeing in our group. Going back to something we talked about earlier, the thing about, I can't remember anymore how it was said actually, but kind of not the right answer, but then doing the conditioned habitual thing instead. Because I actually just recently had an experience like that, and where there was this circumstance, and I could see what needed to be done, and I could see my part in that, and I just chose a different way. I mean, I chose a condition, a piece of conditioning over that. And then, you know, I came to light. And so I've been looking at that. And, you know, what the place I get to is, you know, that it was not worthy of my practice. Mm-hmm. to do that. And it's without, it feels like without self-hate. It's just, it feels like it's just a fact that was not worthy of the practice. You know, I can say my practice or the practice to make a choice like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was seeing, you know, again, you know, there are certain things, and this is one of them, that over the years have been pointed out to me over and over again as a blind spot for me. And this one in particular continues to be a blind spot. And you know, I look at it sometimes like, I don't think I've budged at all. I don't think that's true actually, but it feels like that sometimes. And what I was looking at with it is, you know, I was looking at it, well, why, what do I need to do, you know, or how do I need to be in order to make a difference with this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized is I need to want to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Uh-huh.
I need to want it to be different than I need in me, and I need to want to come from a different place in relationship with it.
Uh-huh.
If I were to decide that, I think it would be simple. I think I just would.
Right.
But
because it's the place from which it would be originating.
Yeah, I'd move into the place that's being offered to me.
Yeah.
But there's a karmic habit of staying in a place. There's a place, you know, it's a separate self spot.
Yeah, well, it's the payoff that keeps it all in place. I don't know if that's your experience in it, but as you're talking about it, it's like, you know, it has the opportunity to throw back on again and say that, you know, you're never going to get out of this. It's almost like this is the well, it's like karma. It's the thing that's going to keep driving it.
Yeah, for me, I would say the payoff is self-hate. I just really am not interested in that. I don't want to feel bad about things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to look to myself, whatever that is, and with the feeling that I have done less than is possible for me.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, I have to be careful with that kind of tact, because you know it'd be so easy for self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
But it's along the lines of. Sherry said something, I think I've mentioned this in group before already, but a while back, she said it a couple times, that really stuck out for me, which is you don't want to give conditioning any good reasons. Basically, I can't remember how she said it, but basically any good reasons to beat you up.
Yeah.
You know, what you want is when conditioning says, you're a blankety blankety blank, you can say, show me the evidence.
Right.
And it has nothing. It has nothing to use. Because those little things where you know, I know what's correct, not in a head kind of knowing, but I just can see this is correct, but then I choose something else other than that.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of floats around in conditioned minds, so it can be used.
Exactly.
But to eliminate all of those, to as best as I can, I mean, I think that's probably a lifelong process, but to eliminate those so that it basically has nothing to use.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can sense in that, just self-hate, going further and further off into the distance.
Yeah.